AI can really understand what people are thinking, and it can surface the patterns in the real world.
I am unwilling to give up, that I will start over from scratch as many times as it takes to get where I want to be.
You just want to make sure you will get knocked down, but just make sure you don't get knocked out.
So your only choice should be go focus on what you can control.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Kara Golden Show. Join me each week for inspiring conversations with some of the world's greatest leaders. We'll talk with founders, entrepreneurs, CEOs, and really some of the most interesting people of our time. Can't wait to get started. Let's go. Hi, everyone. It's Kara Golden from The Kara Golden Show, and I'm so excited to have my next guest here. So we have Manoj Agarwal here, who is the founder and CEO of Tetranoodle Technologies. We had actually met through LinkedIn, who I'm very grateful for all the platforms that are out there today where you can meet people from all different industries all over the world, and they get to know you and your stories. And Manoj was one that I really, really admire what he's done. So he is the founder of Tetranoodle Technologies. He's a business accelerator, an inventor. He's also an author. And he also has a podcast, which I recently was on as well. And he is just this amazing, amazing, very smart human being who over the last 25 years has really made some huge dents in the technology industry. But today we're going to talk a little bit more about how Manoj built Tetranoodle and how they're using technologies like AI, artificial intelligence, that is blockchain and human psychology to better inform their clients. So interesting. Very, very excited to talk a little bit more. And by the way, many, many people may not know the brand name Tetranoodle, but large companies like Microsoft and IBM and universities like the University of British Columbia are all using it and are very aware of what Manoj is doing. So definitely pay attention here and learn something if you haven't heard about Manoj and what he's doing before. And he's also written two books, which I want to talk a little bit more about technology deployment. And he, like I said, hosts the podcast Bootstrapping Your Dreams, which is an incredible show. So welcome, Manoj.
Thank you so much. And thanks a lot for that introduction. So excited to be here. Yeah.
Absolutely. So where are you today?
I'm in Vancouver, Canada.
Okay. Yeah. Wonderful. Very, very nice. And tell us a little bit now, where did you grow up? Where was little Manoj starting out his life?
Sure. Yeah. I know I grew up in India, in northern part of India, very small town. This was obviously, 45 years ago. And small town in India, even today, India has advanced quite a bit since I was there. But even today, there are not a lot of opportunities, especially in the smaller towns. So when I was growing up, I had very limited resources in terms of opportunities, educational opportunities. The nearest higher educational institution to get your bachelor's degree was about like 6 hours drive. So based on all this, my career started at 15. So, the only option that I had was to work in a factory. And it was quite a tough job, 6 days a week, 12 hours a day. And we used to get $2 a day. And that's where my journey started. And it was through series of coincidences and, just sheer luck that I saw something else that was possible in life. And one thing led to another, and here I am. I mean, I can go deeper into that story, but that's where I started.
I love it. What was the factory? I'm just curious.
Yeah, it was industrial fasteners, a huge nuts and bolts. They go in bridges and heavy machinery and those kind of things. So very hot furnaces. You have to almost melt steel, make it red hot, and then forge it with heavy machinery. And that's what creates that, you know, giant nuts and bolts, which hold these bridges together, machineries together.
That's incredible. What do you think? I always say to people when you're going through times that, you know, are challenging in some way, but I think it also applies to even those early days of maybe jobs that seem so far away, right? But what did you learn in that role?
You know, if you want to learn, I say there is always a lesson that you can learn. Like, if you are curious enough, and we were talking about this on my podcast with you as well, if you're curious enough and you want to learn, you can pick things up. So one of the things, you know, when I was working in a factory, these fasteners they carry a lot of weight, and they are put in very, very important heavy machinery, bridges, as I said. So lives depend on them. And so you have very, very precise specifications within micrometers or millimeters, and you have to comply. Otherwise, you're just not going to be able to either sell it. Even if you're able to sell it, it's not going to fit. And in terms of strength, steel strength, you have to test it. It's not going to break under this much load and whatnot. So that kind of precision, even though, you know, I had very modest education, but the practical applications of this kind of precision gave me education about whatever you do, you gotta focus on quality. You gotta focus on precision. You have to make sure that people can rely on whatever you are doing. And then, you know, being importance of time. You cannot just wake up one day and say, oh, you know, I'll sleep in. A factory is like an engine. You have to keep running, and it has to be like on time every time. And so you have to be there, whether you are sick, whether it's raining, whatever, you have to be there at 8:30 and do it. So all these habits, you know, you pick up, you and they become part of you. They become part of your character. So those are some important things I learned. And the other thing is, you know, communication, you know, talking to people, understanding them, collaborating with them. Generally, people don't work in teams until they are much older. They have passed universities, they go into professional careers. And even then, in many cases, they sort of work in isolation. So when I got the experience, even though at that moment, you know, you don't realize it, and sometimes you really resent it because you have to work with people, they treat you like, a piece of crap. And then you still have to comply with the orders, you have to deliver. And that also was a huge lesson for me in the later part of my life, to how to collaborate, how to communicate. And these kind of things were really valuable.
I think that's so key. I mean, I think that, you know, you remind me, it was about 2 years ago, I was speaking at a university to a group of engineers, and I somehow was asked a question about what do you think is a key piece of learning that you've taken over the years and jumping between industries, et cetera. And I think it goes into a lot of what you're saying too, that gaining appreciation for other things that maybe you're not doing, maybe it's in a different department, but looking back on my own journey, I think that when you understand how components come together, when you say you're an engineer and you don't have appreciation for finance or marketing or any of these other aspects because you don't really understand it, you'll never be running a company if you don't appreciate those things. You don't have to know how to do all of them and to scale, but you need to understand a little bit about it. And I think that some of those early jobs where maybe, you know, there's more in the wheel than just what you're doing, and understanding the teams aspect, even though they're not necessarily called teams at that time. So that is, you know, great learning along the way that I always try and press on people. No matter what you're doing, do it well, but also have appreciation and try and get a bigger understanding of what other people are doing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So a lot of, you know, your history, you've done some amazing things, but you are the founder of Tetranoodle Technologies. Tell us a little bit about that company and a little bit about what you're doing.
Yeah. So, you know, as I was sort of going through my professional career, and I had early success, at home, things were not very, very right. You know, I've had a challenging relationship with my parents, challenging relationship with my spouse. And but then as it is generally, you know, when you are getting success in one area of life, you know, you say, ah, these people don't understand me. So what ended up happening was after some time I had my first child and, you know, I was not able to bond with him. He was not very close to me. So that really touched my heart, broke my heart that, hey, you know, I've gone through life trying to push through, make something out of my life. And along the way, whoever doesn't agree with me, I just blame them. Hey, you know, you don't know what you're talking about. But then how can I blame a child and that to my own child? So that sort of really was one of the darkest periods for me because I was like, you know, this life, I don't even know what to do with it because if I can't connect with my kid, that's going to be a hard life, which led me to find solutions. Being an engineer, you know, always, okay, you know, there is a problem, let's figure out a solution. So then because of that experience, I said, there must be something in me that is causing all this. So which led me to, you know, going into meditation, understanding about the mind, getting into spirituality and things like that. And then a lot of dots started to connect, which is, you know, how we create our own reality, how we think differently based on our past experiences and things like that. And then on top of that, I was getting into AI. So I have 4 patents in artificial intelligence. And when I looked at the continuum of how our mind thinks, and what AI is doing, it's basically a continuum because AI can really understand what people are thinking and it can surface the patterns in the real world, what really works, how people think. Whether that's right or wrong, irrespective of that, AI will just tell you, this is what people are thinking. And if you look at it, how this is applied, all the social media platforms use it and they amplify what people are thinking and they sort of... you know, in their own way, reinforce that belief. And that is the reason it becomes so addictive for people to go to social media platforms. Now, I was never like a very social person. You know, I'm still an introvert. But just looking at all these things, I connected the dots that, hey, if these large corporations can use it for, you know, for social media purposes or getting attention, we can use it for many other purposes. So in the industry, in the business, there are so many applications. You know, if you want to break into new markets, if you want to raise pricing, if you want to, you know, make your customer more loyal. So it's all about understanding other people. And as humans, you know, we have ego problems, we have biases, we have, you know, we have days which are not, we are not in a good mood to talk to other people. But as you apply AI in these realms, it can actually start to build these connections. It can actually start to build these relationships and then practical applications can be implemented. So that's sort of what we do now, where we help corporations understand their data and then apply it in the real world to grow their business, make their business better, build connections, get their message out, and all these things are possible. You know, it's amazing.
So how do you think about the, you know, the startup who you're talking to versus a, you know, big corporation? How are they similar? How are they different as it applies to your business?
You know, startups want to move fast and they are chaotic. But they want the structure of large corporations. They want the connections of large corporations. They want the exposure of the large corporation. On the other hand, large corporations have all this. Like they have resources, they have money, they have structure, but they lack the nimbleness. They lack the you know, the ability to move fast. So what we try to do, and then we see this across industries as well, where, you know, one industry has solved a problem, but then the other industry does not know anything about different industries. So they still struggle with the same problem. Yet, since they don't like pick up their head and see, hey, if somebody else has solved the problem. So that's what we do. We cross-pollinate these ideas and help startups move faster, gain traction very quickly. And on the other hand, large corporations, they want nimbleness. So we help them with take the ideas from startup and then do the hit and trial sort of a way of agile methodologies, those kind of things that large corporations don't generally understand. We help them implement those. So both of them benefit in this way.
Interesting. Super, super interesting. I think also, obviously, large companies sometimes, as I say, they can't get out of their own way, right?
Yeah, so exactly.
It's
exactly.
When people are trying to look at new trends, I think that the big question, I'm sure you've run into this, is are they actually willing to move forward? So,
absolutely,
you know, startups, when you start with a blank slate rather than trying to fix things that large companies are doing, that's really what I think the key difference is there. So, and then obviously, like you said, the resources, they don't have the resources, but large companies don't know what to do sometimes with all those resources. So I've read about your work deploying blockchain. Talk to me a little bit about, for the newbies into blockchain, what is blockchain?
See, blockchain, I'll try to explain the benefit of blockchain first. Since commerce started, like early days, till today, people, as humans, we cannot trust each other inherently. So if you say, hey, I'm gonna sell you $100,000 worth of goods, I don't know if I give you $100,000 whether you will keep that promise and send it to me. Not you personally, but in typical transactions. So in these cases, what you have to do is you have to put an intermediary in the mix, like a bank or escrow or something like that, where you both can trust each other. And then that party will take on the responsibility of, making this transaction happen. So the banks and intermediary institutions, they take hefty fees and things like that for providing this facility of arbitraging the trust between parties. Now, with blockchain, it is an immutable ledger, meaning once the data goes in, it never can be changed. So if somebody makes a promise to me and we put it on blockchain, nobody can change it. So that creates a technology where distributed parties, they don't even need to know each other. They don't even have to know the name. They don't even have to look each other in the eye or shake hands. But they can put their data on a blockchain, and thus the technology enables a distributed trust between parties. So that is sort of the business context of blockchain. And now you can apply this in many, many areas where, you know, you have multiple parties looking for reliable source of information, which is tamper-proof. So, you know, land deeds, currency exchange, educational records, and what have you. So that is why blockchain has become so important so quickly, besides the cryptocurrency kind of thing. But the underlying benefit is that, you know, it has the capability of providing distributed trust between parties who do not trust each other inherently.
Interesting. So you're the author of Network Security with PF Sense. So how did you decide to author this book?
Yeah. So, anybody who's looking for books, these are very, very technical books. If you want to go to sleep, maybe a good read. But basically, for me, it's I'm a security nut as well, because we worked in healthcare industry, we worked in educational industry, so we really have to be careful about privacy, security, and things like that. And what I find is a lot of people complain, "Oh, my computer got hacked," and I lost my images. And when I say, "Okay, what did you do to prevent it ahead of time?" And generally, they didn't do anything. So, yeah. And it's not their fault either, because technology is not something that you inherently gravitate towards. You just assume that if you buy a computer, it is secure. If you have a router, it is secure. But that's not the case. And when you want to implement security, generally, if you talk to a cybersecurity expert, they're going to say, we're going to plan it. We're going to, buy equipment. We're going to do all this stuff. But at the end of the day, people need to realize there are fantastic free tools available out there which can secure your network, very, very, in a very good way. And not only that, there is additional functionality available in these free softwares that is not even available in commercial appliances, commercial software. So one of the things that I always use is an open source firewall. A firewall is basically a protection for your network. And pfSense is one of the best out there. It can not only protect your network, but it can provide secure remote access to employees. It can combine multiple internet connections. So in my home, for example, home office, I have two connections because my life and business depends on the internet. So if one goes down, it automatically shifts to other. And if both are up, it divides the traffic. So all these things absolutely free, available. And so when I see people not using it or not aware of it, that sort of gives me the inspiration to say, hey, these things are available. You should look at this and you should use it. And so that is why I created a course. That is why I created wrote the book and all that. So it's more about just spreading this information, which is not in the purview of a lot of people, even professionals. Because it's kind of, you have to really dig deep to figure out what are the solutions available.
No, it's so true. And so the pfSense you were saying, but also how do people find out more about your course?
As I said, education is what sort of turned my life around. I didn't have anything else going for me. And so I'm really passionate about education. So it's not just one course. We have published about 75 courses on various topics.
Amazing.
So we have about 185,000 students right now. We teach technology, business, entrepreneurship. So this was just one of the courses. And just Google my name. I think you'll be able to find it. It's most of the courses are technical, but we are now getting into more, executive coaching and professional development, things like that, because I feel like that's another area where we can make a difference.
Definitely. One of the things I've heard you talk about is startup myths. Mm-hmm. Tell us more about some of the startup myths that are out there.
Yeah. That's a good one. I'm a reader. I read about history, anthropology, evolution. And when I look at evolution of business and commerce, this term venture capital came into existence no more than 30, 40 years ago. And before that, businesses were around and, nobody said, hey, I want to raise money to build a business. So when I look at the culture in Silicon Valley, in media, they celebrate things like, oh, this company raised $10 million. But when I look at it underneath the covers, I say, do you know what is happening? Basically, you sold part of your company for $10 million. And now that person who lent you that money, they have, discretion or power over you, over your decisions. So if you do that too early in your life cycle, you are not independent enough to navigate the entrepreneurial journey. A lot of people, so that's one myth. I have to raise money as the first step of my business. So many entrepreneurs I talk to say, oh, I have a brilliant idea. It's going to change the world. All I'm looking for is $1 million. And I've been looking for that $1 million for the past 3 years. And I ask them, okay, what did you do in those 3 years? Absolutely nothing.
Yeah,
absolutely
they waited.
Nothing. I'm like, how do you think somebody will invest in you if you don't want to invest in you in the past 3 years? Like, it doesn't make sense to me. And then the next one is build it and they will come. They say, oh, it worked for Facebook. It worked for YouTube. I'm like, do you know how many failure stories you don't listen to and they just vanish, because they didn't do anything in terms of marketing and getting the message out there. And today we are living in so much noise. Like, people have 2 or 3 seconds attention span these days, and that too they are distracted between their phone and social media. And so you really have to hit them with the hammer on their head to say, hey, notice me, like, I've got something good for you. And when I hear people say, oh, build it and they will come, I have to tell them, if you are that lucky, you will just win the lottery. You don't even have to lift a finger. But if you really want to build a business, you really need to pound the pavement. You really need to devote a lot of time to get the message out there. So these are some of the myths that, and then the next one is, I need a unique idea. Everybody else is doing it. I need a unique idea. I'm like, do you know how risky it is to come up with a unique idea? Like, If that was the case, then after Uber, there will not be Lyft. After Amazon, there will not be a Shopify. After, you know, a Colgate, there's not going to be any other toothpaste in the marketplace. So this myth that you need a unique idea is another one where people just have these myths in their mind about entrepreneurship, and they fail to recognize it's basically all about connection between human to human. It's how you show up. It's how you present your offer with your sort of color on top of it, and how it resonates with your audience. That's what it is all about. So there could be 100 different offers for the same thing. If the market is big enough, you will find your place. So these are some of the typical myths that people have, especially in the startup world.
Definitely. No, I love those. And there are so many things that applied to my own journey of Hint. And people have asked me in even starting Hint, when I came from technology to deciding to start a beverage company, they said, why aren't you raising money? And I always tell people, like, why does everybody think you need to raise money in order to start a product? Because I really wanted to get some traction and not give away the whole company I started. So a lot of people don't think about that if you can actually do something with nothing before you actually go and raise money, it's way better. Otherwise, it's a bad episode of Shark Tank.
And here is another thing, you know, convincing somebody to give you money on an idea is 10 times harder than to sell a product, because you are giving something back in value. And the other thing is that when you find some buyers, it actually becomes 10 times easier to find the investor, because now the investor sees that you have traction and their money is safe and it's going to grow. So, you know, if we do the math, it's 100 times easier to find an investor after you find a customer.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So one of the things that before we close out, you had developed an AI-based system to help students avoid dropping out, which was highlighted by and praised by President Barack Obama and also Bill Gates. Tell me a little bit more about that. That's wild.
Yeah. See, I mean, this is a good example of AI and big data in a real world application. So the thing is that most students, they enroll in university courses based on recommendations or friends, you know, friends going into certain field, they just follow them. And then after a couple of years, they say, oh, you know, this is not of interest to me. Then they drop out. So two things happen. One, the educational institutions lose the revenue. So it's actually a $450 billion loss of revenue in US alone because of dropout rates. And 30% of the students actually drop out. And on the other side, on the society, the impact is that those students get demoralized. They do not get their degree generally. And, you know, their life is sort of affected, right? So what we did was we said, okay, let's figure out what has been their past performance, what has been their aptitude, what are they interested in. So we collected their SAT scores, their school scores, their, you know, historical performance. And then based on all that data, we look for patterns. And then almost like Netflix recommends movies and shows to you, we recommend the right courses to the students. And so the result is students who go through this program, they take 20% more courses. And the dropout rate declined, and the impact was huge, and that's the reason why Barack Obama mentioned it in his State of the Union address, and Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation supported it, and it's a patented technology. So these are some practical examples of how AI can really make a huge impact.
Did you know this was going to happen when he put it in the State of the Union? No.
I mean, I found out much, much later. And the fact is, not being a marketing guy, I didn't even say that to anybody. And then somebody coached me. I was sharing about this. I was like, really? Why don't you talk about it? I'm like, I don't know. I mean, this is the technology we built. And then, no, you got to tell these things to other people, you know? So,
That's incredible. So, well, that is such a, That's a huge thing. And I think that the best things happen when you don't expect them. And
yeah,
and
exactly.
That's really, really incredible. So your insights are just so enlightening. And I love learning a lot about this. This has been a half hour of just inspiration, but also definitely people learning a lot more about how AI can affect their business and how you just go out and just do it more than anything else. And your podcast, as we mentioned, that I was recently on is really incredible. You have some incredible guests on there. You've now grown to be a big podcaster as well. I'm definitely a little motivated by your experience and what you've seen. It's really, really incredible. So thank you so much for coming on, and thanks everybody for listening. We're here every Monday and Wednesday with amazing guests who are really sharing all kinds of great insights and stuff, but also just stories of how you can do it too, just by listening to other people, listening to people's journeys of, you know, lots of underdogs, I think, joined me on mine to really share that they came from something and it really improved and maybe had some bumps along the way. But clearly, I think it's more than anything, you need to hear those in order to move forward. And your story is definitely that. So
thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much. I'm so thankful, excited to be part of this podcast. Amazing questions. And you are an amazing human being. And you have done amazing things in your life, as you said, you know, going over all these challenges. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much. And everybody, subscribe and give lots of stars to Manoj. And thank you, everyone. Have a great rest of the week. Before we sign off, I want to talk to you about fear. People like to talk about fearless leaders, but achieving big goals isn't about fearlessness. Successful leaders recognize their fears and decide to deal with them head on in order to move forward. This is where my new book, Undaunted, comes in. This book is designed for anyone who wants to succeed in the face of fear, overcome doubts, and live a little undaunted. Order your copy today at undauntedthebook.com and learn how to look your doubts and doubters in the eye and achieve your dreams. For a limited time, you'll also receive a free case of Hint Water. Do you have a question for me or want to nominate an innovator to spotlight? Send me a tweet at Kara Golden and let me know. And if you like what you heard, please leave me a review on Apple Podcasts. You can also follow along with me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn at Kara Golden. Thanks for listening.